I'm Megan Segura.
And I'm Eric J. Mack.
And this is The Daily Dish, Bravo's official podcast.
Happy Halloween, Megan.
Eric, happy Halloween. You have your party tonight?
So here's the thing. within the last week, it turned out that I had been in contact with someone who tested positive for COVID-19. So, yes, everyone is okay. I mean, my friend has symptoms, but she's doing fine. Everyone who was involved at the event that we were at on Saturday last week has tested negative. So everyone is good. But this was also the group of friends that was planning this Halloween party. So what I will say is happy Halloween. It is very real still. Everyone, please stay vigilant, stay safe, but that will not prevent me from missing out on Halloween. I'm still going to dress up, even if it means I'm sitting in my living room looking crazy as little Edie. I don't care. It's on brand.
I love it. Also, how did the friend tell you? I'm so curious.
It was a phone call. It was a phone call in the morning during the week where I was like, why would she be calling me like on a Tuesday? It was Tuesday or Wednesday, I think, of last week. And, you know, the second you answer that call, like you can hear it in someone that you know, you can hear it in their voice that something is up. And I was like, here we go. And she had taken two tests because she was going to see her grandmother. So she was being super responsible. And one of the tests, the rapid test came back negative, but the PCR, the real test, came back positive. So then she contacted everyone. We had been all together at an outdoor bar and then at like a bonfire in someone's backyard. So we really were thinking we're outside. It's all good. Like, you know, this is fine. But after a few drinks, you let your guard down a bit. It is what it is. We all have a bit of that pandemic fatigue. Right. But this whole past week, everyone in my friend group, we've all been, you know, in touch every day, just making sure everyone's good, testing negative, and just kind of reminding each other that this is so very real and that you have to be careful because it's not just about you. It's about what you can, you know, how you can affect other people. So that's my soapbox.
Absolutely. Good on your friend for being honest. And, you know, I think that's probably also a hard phone call to make sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, she is like racked with guilt. She feels so terrible. She, you know, kissed me on the cheek as I was leaving that night because we've been friends forever. And, you know, you don't think when you're around your friends, you want to be physical. You don't realize, you know, what you could be doing. But, you know, it's all good. Everybody's healthy and safe. And, you know, we are on the up and up from this.
Good. Well, in other news, we have a new housewife to welcome to the Beverly Hills family.
Yes, Crystal Kung Minkoff. She is married to a famous director. She's the first Asian American housewife on the franchise, which is super exciting.
Very exciting. I'm so curious to get to know her and see how she meshes with the other ladies.
I know. I feel like, you know, we don't know exactly who's confirmed for the cast yet, but, you know, looking at her, she looks, you know, pretty innocent and like easygoing. She's a mom, you know, I'm like, okay, but I'm curious to know where she's going to fit in and who she's coming in through, you know?
On a similar note, Ebony K. Williams, who is the newest Real Housewife of New York City, sent BravoTV.com a video sort of introducing herself to fans so we can get an idea of what she's like, what she's about. And she talked about who she's excited to meet from the group and even revealed which former housewife sent her a congratulations message. It was Dorinda.
Ooh.
And it was a nice one.
Okay, good. She made it nice.
So we are including a link so you guys can go and watch that video.
And big news, my girl Sheena Shea is expecting.
Sheena is pregnant. My God, there must be something in the water in LA right now. They are,
I mean, seriously,
all some fertile myrtles at the moment.
Fertile myrtles. Well, congrats to Sheena and her boo, Brock Davies. They're expecting their first child together. And last but not least, you guys, there are only a few more days to go out and vote. So please, if you haven't already, I know so many people have probably done mail-in ballots and early voting, but if you're planning to go in person, November 3rd, it's your last day. Get out there and vote. Okay, what are we talking today?
Well, we need to talk about Below Deck Med, the second part of the reunion.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, we have Real Housewives of Potomac, Real Housewives of Orange County. And later in the episode, we have an interview with Craig Conover from Southern Charm. So we can talk about the season 7 premiere.
I can't wait to see or listen to how much you flirt with him during this interview.
A lot.
Okay, Below Deck Med?
Yes.
All right. So, I mean, I want to start by just saying, you know, the listeners know, I am so pro-weed. Everyone knows that. But at the end of the day, the law is the law. And what this conversation is circling around is like, it affects more than just, you know, Hannah or Jess or whoever has the weed pen in whatever situation it may be. And I feel like that message is not getting through to some people.
Well, so then I guess what you're saying is you're in the camp that firmly believes it was THC in that pen.
I think, yes, it seems to be that way. There seems to be some answers that are not coming out or responses by Hannah that seem a little sketchy to me, where I guess at the end of the day, we're never going to know what was in that pen. I think the bigger question is the Valium and when that prescription was given. And, you know, Hannah's claiming her name was on the box. We couldn't see it. The prescription came to production 12 hours later. You know, I don't know. There are still some things that I think Hannah or Jess or whoever, mostly Hannah, should have done. And the excuse that Jess kept bringing, like, well, someone should have told me. And like, it's like in your contract. So like that, it doesn't, like the law doesn't work that way. Like when you sign your name on a piece of paper, you got to read what it says.
I think for me in this reunion, it's like Malia is making excellent points. I totally hear her. It's just her delivery. And I think that she did come off as so spiteful towards Hannah that even though what she's saying is correct, I'm just like, enough. Enough from you, Malia. I get it.
Jess, Hannah, anyone that doesn't understand this, I'm not going to fight with you. It's not about mental illness. It's not about anxiety. I have anxiety. Of course, we're all anxious. It's about maritime law and the safety of the vessel. That's all.
Yeah, well, I mean, the way she's presenting it isn't making her that likable, right? Like, you're not like, oh, yes, Malia, absolutely. Mm-hmm, Team Malia. It's not really Team Malia. I mean, I really like Hannah, and I wish that her fate did not play out the way it did on the show. But it is a bit of a black and white situation, given the circumstances of how everything played out, the order of events, the lack of, you know, responsibility and accountability on Hannah's part to actually be proactive and be like, I'm taking this, this, and this. Like, this, she should know that that stuff needs to be registered with the boat, and her decision could affect more than just her. It can affect Sandy's license, what happens to the vessel, the whole thing. It's much bigger than Hannah's anxiety. It affects more people.
I think the one person who I'm just like, ugh, why are you doing this to yourself, is Bugsy. Because I think for the most part, Bugsy got off scot-free in terms of, like, she was not part of this conversation through the season. She came on, you know, right before Hannah left, and she had nothing to do with the reporting of the Valium or the pen. But I just felt like she kept interjecting herself in this reunion in a way that just was like, why? Because now you're making me not like you. I just felt like it's not your place, like, to be like, guys, it was obviously THC. Okay, like, be cool, Bugsy. Just be cool. All right.
As someone in the industry, I do know that you can actually fill that cartridge with any oil you want. I actually specialize that in Los Angeles when I'm not yachting.
Oh, guys, just let it go. It was obviously THC.
Jesus Christ.
People like to get high.
Let me not talk or explain.
Yeah. I feel like she and probably Alex, I kept looking at Alex through this whole conversation, and he was about on his second bottle of red wine potentially, and just kind of like starting to slump and look a little bored, and his eyes were glazing over. I feel like everyone was so sick of this conversation because it had continued so much on social media when the show was airing. And I feel like everyone was sort of just sick of discussing it at that point. So I think Bugsy was just trying to be like, can we move on from this? But obviously it was one of the biggest moments of the season, potentially of the entire series. So we need to spend some time breaking it down and getting everybody's opinion who was involved. But I can see why Bugsy was just sort of like, all right, enough already. Like, let's move on.
It was interesting seeing how Jess reacted to and talked to Captain Sandy, like, in a way that everyone wishes they could sort of talk to their boss at some point. And, you know, you have these fantasies of when you quit a job, you're like, I'm going to say this and I'm going to say this. And she kind of did. I just feel like telling your boss to shut up, you know?
Right.
Whew.
Jess had weed as well.
I had a pen.
You had pot? You had THC on board.
No, I had a THC pen as well for my anxiety.
That is not legal. Yes, that's so illegal. Like, do you know the boat could be seized?
Cuff me. Oh, my God. Arrest me.
Yeah, well, the boat could be seized.
Well, the thing is I should have been notified of that. I didn't know. I honestly didn't know until the show that I also...
You didn't know that THC was illegal?
Yeah,
are you talking about CBD, Jess?
CBD. I'm sorry. CBD. CBD. Whatever.
I felt thanks.
Everyone's had that fantasy for sure. I think what drove me crazy about Jess is that she was like doubling down and working really hard to avoid taking any accountability. Like, just the fact that she kept being like, well, you should have told me, like, you should have mentioned to all of us that, like, I was just sort of like, no, that's not how it works, girl. Like, I'm sorry, but that would never work in a court of law. That would never work in most situations, you know, like, sorry, that's not how life goes. But I definitely, you know, we all lived a little vicariously through her by being able to, you know, shade your former boss in ways that we have all imagined we could.
Right. So we get into Jess and Rob's relationship in this episode, and I was really ready for Jess to tell all, just to be like, and here's a laundry list of things he did that you at home didn't get to see, and she just didn't.
I know that you were really excited about that, and I was excited for you and really waiting for that moment. I was sitting there waiting for Jess to just be like, X, Y, and Z, and obviously the whole message to Aisha, and then these... they were apparently unsent messages, according to her. Like, when that came up, I was like, okay, here we go. This is some dirty laundry. But I think Jess was sitting on a lot more than just that. But it was the only thing she could really bring up because it involved someone else at the reunion.
Right. True.
They were trying to hide that exchange. If there were unsent messages there, something tells me that they communicated separately outside of that Facebook message, being like, okay, we need to redact some of this information real quick. But Jess caught it. She got it.
It's so funny because about 10 years ago, I had this friend who would get super drunk and just would stay up all night, keep drinking after everyone had gone to bed. And I would wake up to 5 unsent messages without fail every morning via Facebook. And it wasn't like, who knows? I never saw them, but I just think he was just being a drunk idiot. And then was like, whoa, I'm being a drunk idiot. I should unsend this.
I didn't even know that you could do that. I didn't even know that technology was available that long ago. Never mind now.
Yeah.
Damn, I should go back and unsend some messages that are in my Facebook messages. I can't even imagine. I mean, considering we got Facebook when we were in college, I can only imagine what's in there.
I know. I think about that sometimes.
Yeah, I can never run for public office. Sorry. It's not going to happen. Well, the other thing too that I thought was interesting is the whole situation with Malia and Tom and the conversation that they were having around chefs. And I don't love that Sandy and everyone was kind of normalizing that behavior from chefs. Like, of course it makes good television, right? Like, that's what we love about chefs on Below Deck and Below Deck Med. But come on, is it really just an excuse to just allow them to kind of mistreat the staff? I mean, I understand wanting to be a perfectionist and stuff, but if it's like, well, that's just how chefs are. I mean, that excuse was used for a long time in other industries and in other ways that is now frowned upon and no longer accepted. So I feel like maybe this is time to reevaluate our perspective on chefs.
1,000%. I have to check my attitude and how I talk to people at the door. You know, just because I'm having a bad day at home doesn't mean I can go crazy on a coworker. And it should, so I don't understand why certain professions are supposed to be exempt from that.
Right.
Like, no, there's a standard that it's just propriety. And like, you can't just say everything that comes into your head the way you feel like saying it, you know?
Right. Right. That's why we have other ways to express our frustration. You have to go boxing or you like paint or something, you know, like find a way to express it, not to other people that you work with, because it still comes across to me, no matter how good a chef is, it still comes across to me as unprofessional when they mistreat people that they work with.
Absolutely.
Well, the other thing that I found kind of interesting was what the topic that Malia touched upon when Andy was asking about Tom not following Malia and this weird kind of social media situation the two of them were in, and knowing that they actually broke up shortly thereafter is kind of interesting to just watch his reaction in that moment and her reaction, when especially when they were like, oh, well, are you guys monogamous when you're together? Or like, what's the deal? And it was a very strange reaction.
So wait, did they break up after that? Because I thought the breakup news happened and then the filming of this happened.
I think it was after, because I think it, and I think it was very shortly after, because I remember seeing Malia post that they were like reunited and it looked like they had reunited the day that they filmed the reunion. Because I think Tom said, oh, we just saw each other like 5 hours prior. So I think they saw each other, filmed the reunion, and then broke up, because then Malia was on Watch What Happens Live and basically was like, oh, that whole monogamy thing. Yeah, we had different ideas of what we were doing when we weren't on the same chart or whatever. She kind of hinted that there may have been some level of infidelity, I think.
I just would never want to be in a profession where I only saw my significant other every few months.
Right. I mean, you know, I think it's a thing for the youthful. It's a thing for the young people. Like, I think it's not a thing for us anymore, and for a lot of people, even just the way Bugsy talks about yachting, and now we see with Hannah, you know, it's something that I think you can do early on in your life when you're a little bit more carefree, but it definitely wouldn't be a lifestyle for me either.
Yeah, but at what age do you not want to get laid? That's what I don't understand. You just shouldn't be, and I don't know.
I think that's why they had those sort of like open...
Yeah, you have to. You would have to.
Right. Well, anyway, the thing that I wanted to actually point out was, you know, when Malia kind of touched on this idea of outrage culture, right? Where she was like, oh, we had to take breaks from social media because there was such a major backlash over the Hannah situation that... I mean, Tom was apparently receiving death threats or something. Like, it's so interesting because... something like this can be so dangerous and so traumatic for people. And they've touched on it on Real Housewives of Potomac too, with Candace and everything that she was experiencing online. Not to say that, you know, she didn't do a little bit of that herself at some point, but, you know, the way that people can react and, you know, online bullying, outrage culture, like these things that are kind of a result of social media, you know, to think that Tom would have to unfollow Malia and that they would have to take breaks from social. Like, it just, it's so scary to see how quickly something like that can just take over and really affect your personal life. If you have to, like, you're getting death threats. I mean, come on, Tom and Malia, no, that's not how it should be working.
There's a lot of negative comment, you know, to have like, you know, my mom replied to death threats the other day.
That's insane.
You're getting death threats about your behavior in the kitchen?
Death threats by association.
It's funny because I've obviously felt insane passion for a show before and like my likes and dislikes. I mean,
yeah.
It's part of what makes us able to do this job. Like, we have strong opinions. Yeah, I guess it takes just a little bit of unhinged then plus that passion, and then it turns into death threats.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Malia made a really good point, being like, we are still human beings. We are people. We have lives. We have jobs. We have things outside of this show. This show is only one part of who we are. And I think that's always so important to remember with housewives, with people on reality TV, you know. And it's something that I say a lot when people ask, like, oh my God, what is it like when you meet, you know, some of these Bravo Lebs and stuff? And I'm like, well, it's so cool. It's so great. Like, I love meeting them. They're big personalities. They're so fun. But it's also like, oh, they are like regular everyday people who like have feelings. And, you know, when they're right in front of you, it's easier to see that. And I think when they're behind a screen, people feel a little more entitled to not only have opinions about them, but voice them in the medium of social media.
So I got the chance to interview Craig, my favorite. And even though it wasn't in person, we still had a great conversation. I didn't get to look at him, but I imagined him as I was talking to him. And I really wanted to dive into the drama with Catherine in this first episode. And plus, he gave some really good deets about the rest of the season. So here's that interview. So welcome back to the podcast, Craig. It's nice to have you on, even though it's under different circumstances this season.
Yeah, thanks, girls. I wish I was in, you know, New York with you all, but hopefully sometime soon.
Yeah, I've been already getting into this season. It's great. I can't help but notice the huge cast shakeup we have this season versus last. And I wonder, did it feel weird to you, or did it feel like there was a certain absence when you began filming without certain people?
You know, obviously Cam was tough. You know, I wasn't prepared for that. It happened very unexpectedly. And, you know, her, Shep, and I are, you know, been doing it. You know, we've always been together. So not having like my big sister there was tough. Other than that, it was fine. I mean, I love Naomi and Chelsea to death, but I think that their lives, you know, on camera were just had maxed out. You know, Chelsea wasn't willing to open up her life any more than she already had. And if you're not transparent on camera, then, and Naomi had, you know, moved on with her life, you know, in a different direction. And, you know, so I was excited to get some new girls onto the show. I mean, Leva's been in our life for 10 years. I've been friends with her. We own a couple of restaurants together. She was Cameron's old roommate. And so she's always been in our lives, and she's actually been a big sister to me, just like Cameron. It just hasn't, you know, we haven't tracked that before. And so that's kind of a newer relationship that you'll get to see on your television screens. And the other girls did amazing too. And by doing amazing, all that requires is you being yourself while you're filming, you know? And so they were ready to, they actually surprised me with how authentic they were. So it was good.
Yeah. I have to imagine it's also a little bit of a relief to not have to see your ex so much. That's not like a normal thing that usually happens.
That was definitely tough. The prior, you know, 2 years, fortunately now, you know, we're both dating and moved on, and you'll get to see me date this year. And, you know, once you find new people and start dating, it's just funny. We had a fun, you know, interaction. We ran into each other at an event a couple weeks ago, and we hadn't gotten a talk in a while. And we talked for like 15 minutes, and her and I just laughed about the things that we used to do in our relationship that we don't do. And her new relationship and my, you know, whoever, if I'm, you know, dating or whatnot. So it was nice. I think it would have been great to have like her and her boyfriend at a dinner with me and one of my dates. You know, I think that
would be totally
great. But, you know, they're moving in another direction, so it's fine. But yeah, you know, filming with your ex is not ideal. Usually you don't want to see him again. And
yeah, especially not right after. You need that little bit of separation to just sort of, you know, to have some space from it and have some perspective.
Fortunately, we were respectful and kind of each other. I know that Austin was terrified that Madison was going to bring, you know, someone to one of our events. I thought, you know, I mean, you'll just have to wait to see what happens. But yeah, I know that that's one of his biggest fears. So, you know, it's definitely a unique situation.
So the premiere episode is full of shocking tidbits. Finding out that Catherine and Thomas were living together again.
When I found out about Thomas and Catherine, I was, you know, my jaw hit the floor. I was like, what? I mean, you know, even though I shouldn't be surprised at this point, it's still like,
yeah,
always going to be shocking. And to find out, you know, he filmed, I think, is absolutely incredible. That man is television gold that you will never find anywhere else. But he, you know, and people that are concerned that we're doing him a favor or something by allowing him on camera, we're doing Thomas no favors by letting him film. That is him exposing himself, you know. And so I think that was great. But yeah, I mean, I was blown away. I was like, what? I mean, especially after their bitter custody battle, they just bled each other dry for a year. I mean, like thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars they both spent on legal fees.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so bizarre. I mean, it really is the most bizarre situation.
I think it was surprising as just a fan of the show, because I really felt like Catherine had moved on with all of the girls, and we saw them hanging out and being friendly, and it just, from her confessional, seems like she has held this resentment against Cameron. Did you get that sense from her?
See, I had no idea, and I haven't seen the episode yet, and I'm interested to watch this season. I'm more interested than I've ever been to see what everyone else was kind of like doing. I mean, that would be news to me. You know, I thought Catherine had kind of, I thought she was in a better place. You know, you can't, you know, you can't let other people affect your actions. And you'll see the opposite of what to do with Austin a lot this year. Just because, you know, someone's acting a certain way doesn't mean you should act like them. You know, it's, you gotta be the bigger person. And I don't think she was here, but I, you know, I still have, I don't have all the information, so I don't know.
I'm really excited for you to watch it now. You'll learn a lot. Okay. I wanted to ask about Shep and your relationship with him because, you know, I think he's in this premiere episode sort of realizing that his actions have left maybe like a bad taste in some people's mouths, like even his friends, and then he's sort of working on himself to not prematurely become a grumpy old man is sort of how he put it. Do you feel like he's making good progress on that?
Yeah, I mean, Taylor saved him and his therapist. You know, I had cut Shep out of my life towards the end of last year, towards the fall. Actually, in the fall, there was a Panthers game that we were both at, and I like refused to see him. Like I wasn't answering his calls anymore. Austin was because he didn't know how to handle it, but I was just like, you know, and then he, like, we went out and saw him for like 1 second or something. He just wasn't in a good place. And, you know, I was progressing with Sewing Down South and I was happy, and he just was bitter and mean. And it wasn't good for me anymore. And so I stopped talking to Shep in the fall, but I always held the position. I was like, if you decide that you want to get better, be better, I'm right here. Like, I'll be the first one to go to lunch with you. But until you actually believe that your behavior is not okay and that it's not everyone else's fault for interpreting it that way, then I'm done. And he started to see a therapist and started dating Taylor, and he turned into the best version of himself. He was with me for my birthday in February in New York. This season will be really fun for viewers because it's one of the, you know, we're just best friends. You know, it's him and I are really, really close this year. I'm happy that, you know, he's happy, you know, and that resentment's gone, and he's just kind of a happier version of himself, and he's kind and nice, and it's fun. And we laugh a lot.
It's also so fun in this episode to see your relationship with Austin, and you guys seem like you're even closer than maybe you were last season. Did living together sort of help that? Because usually I feel like living together destroys friendships.
I was on tour like with the pillow parties last year in my house. I had this terrible water damage in my house, so I've been out of it. And so when I would be in town, I would stay with Austin. And, you know, his relationship with Madison is perpetually on and off. And so he, you know, he liked when I was here too. And it was great. It was like college roommates. And then you'll see this season, you know, how it progresses and stuff. But it was really fun getting to do the beginning of quarantine with him and stuff like that. So yeah, it definitely brought us closer because, you know, I was alone. I wasn't dating anyone, and he wasn't, you know, dating anyone. So it was good to have each other.
And the Austin Madison saga continues this season. Have you made peace with them as a couple, or are you still adamant they are not good together?
Well, I mean, they've never been together. You know, that depends on
your definition.
Yeah. And, you know,
they really seem together at certain points this season. Is that not true?
Then that's horseshit. But
what does that mean, though, that they're dating other people?
I mean, Madison does, but Austin doesn't. He'll always be there for, you know, Shep said something to him the other day, which I'll let Shep give you that line, and I'll tell Shep to tell you guys what he told him. But it's, again, this isn't Madison's fault. I'm great. I mean, Madison and I are fine. Austin's a grown adult and he has all the information he needs to make an adult decision, and he decides to be where he's at. And you'll see that we don't give a shit anymore. In the beginning of the season, we didn't care. We're like, go, you can do whatever you want. We don't care anymore. You know, we were done, but things happen that don't allow us to be done with it anymore. And you'll see that. And some, even though it's the most dead horse in the world, it's revived a little bit. And there's a new angle and a new approach taken to it. But Austin's not, neither of them are good people when they're together. You know, it's one of those things that you'll see this season that it's insane. It's absolute insanity. But no, we don't give a shit. I don't care if they're, you know, if they're together or not, just don't mess with my life. So you'll just have to watch.
Okay. I'm really excited to now. I'm especially excited about this John Pringle angle that might be coming in and how that affects things.
Yeah. He, like I said, you forget how old Shep is until you meet his friends. And then
the shade.
Yeah. Pringle's nuts, like in a funny way. Like he came in and was calm and kind and like all put together. And then, man, he can get after it. He came in with some absurd things that I just was, he left me scratching my head so many times. So he's a huge thorn in Austin's side this year, which is funny, but puts a few of us in, you know, compromising situations. So he's definitely kind of like a bull in a china shop.
I think one really interesting thing about this season is we're seeing in real time the sort of reactions from everyone to the pandemic and just sort of the rumblings of COVID and things might get shut down. And then, oh my God, like it has happened and it's happening. I know that, you know, there are moments where you're like, this isn't a thing. It's going to be fine. It's going to blow over. Do you remember having sort of an aha moment of like, oh shit, this is for real and it's serious and it's going to affect our lives?
Yeah, I'm glad that, you know, we were filming during it. I was bummed because, you know, before you realized, you know, the danger of it. I mean, the beginning of our season was started out so well. I mean, we were on fire and shit was happening quickly. So it just came at a, you know, a bad time. And then, you know, I thought it was, you know, I didn't think it was anything until we started to cancel parties and events. And then production went home. You were kind of like, like everything, the entire country shut down. You know, I was confident in the beginning that everything was going to be fine because I was like, you know, we'll just pick back up here in a few months. But then it was like, it just kept going on. And I was like, but yeah, I mean, there was definitely some ups and downs. You know, the beginning was really fun because we just treated it as like a snow day and or snow week in school. But then it started to be like, all right, guys, like what are we doing?
Was it hard for you and your relationship with Catherine when all of the stuff, like you said, with the social landscape? Because, you know, you see in the super tease sort of heat comes down on her.
It was different. It was, you know, I hadn't had to deal with a friend really that, I don't know, it made me aware that, you'll see everyone go through their own kind of journey this season. And for me, you know, I just asked questions. A lot of people are like, you can't say that or you can't do that. And I was like, well, I'm not racist. So as much as I'm not supposed to say that, I guess now I'm not. And so I'm trying to understand this whole thing. And what I learned was that there's a difference between like being racist and being like racially insensitive and not being anti-racist and all this other stuff. And Leva and I talked a lot about it. But yeah, the racially insensitive thing is something that I focused on. I don't know where the show will go this season with it all. But that was how I was able to connect to it. Because I was like, I can't relate to, you know, racism part of it. And I don't hang out with people that are racist. And people, you know, would be like, well, Catherine did this. And I'm like, well, I know in my heart that she's not racist. Like, she doesn't hate people or treat them differently because of their color. But then I'm faced with this demonstration, this behavior that would say otherwise. And yeah, so I did have to go through some like, you know, some analysis of like, I know you're not racist, but why did you send a racist thing to a person of color, you know? And so even in these interviews and stuff, you don't know what to say. And I'm going to continue to just be myself. And it is kind of scary because you don't, you know, there's a lot of hairline trigger reactions to this stuff. But, you know, I think the more open we are about this, you know, the more progress we'll make. And so
for sure,
that's kind of just, you know, my truth.
Yeah. Like, we all need to be doing a lot of listening and open to learning.
Right.
Lastly, on a lighter note, I wanted to ask how the pandemic has affected your love life.
You'll get to see it this season, which is great. You know, it was, I'm excited to talk to you all about that. I don't know if I can talk to you about it now. I guess I can.
Yeah, you can.
I mean, I had a pretty good quarantine. So I met a girl when I was in Aspen in January. And we were both like, I don't know, we were just friends. Like, we weren't really interested in each other there. And then during quarantine, we started to chat, like, on Instagram, and started to text. And because Charleston opened up, she was quarantining in Florida because she had lived in New York, but, you know, wanted to get out of the city for COVID. So she was in Florida and she was like, I kind of want to come to Charleston for my birthday. Or I told her she should come up to Charleston for her birthday. Because at that time, you know, we hadn't been hit. And so we started to open up again because it wasn't here, which then everyone came from New York and California. And then everyone in Charleston got hit. Yeah, so she came up and then we got to quarantine together, which was awesome. So it wasn't bad. But learning how to be out of quarantine with each other has been the challenge. So we'll see what happens whenever we start filming again. But it was funny. I thought that, like, if you could quarantine together, that means you're fine. Because that's what a lot of couples would struggle with, is being together all the time. But what you don't realize, or for us, is, like, you know, we were in kind of the honeymoon phase in a bubble, protected from the outside world. And so we just got to enjoy ourselves. And now we're dealing with regular stuff. So
yeah.
Also, dating someone on a TV show isn't the easiest thing in the world. And
yeah.
But yeah, timing is funny because so I am dating this year, which is good. And you will get to see it. So, you know, she was hesitant. She didn't want to film at all. Like, that wasn't, she shouldn't have been blindsided with it, but she would be like, you know, she was more of the person which was like, well, that's your thing, which is good because you don't really want to date someone that would want to be on TV.
Right.
The problem is then, you know, you're kind of sacrificing some stuff. I would have loved to show more but you know, you get to see a little bit, which is good. And hopefully it plays out well, because if not.
I feel like the quarantining together, like, it really has fast-tracked a lot of relationships. Like, people are going to come out of this married, you know? Do you feel like that sort of happened?
Yeah, and we had to take a step back, because as much as we wanted to say we weren't living together, afterwards, we essentially were. And we were able to realize that. For me, I didn't,
right.
I couldn't see it. And it is actually something that Austin said to me. He's like, Craig, of course. He was like, you and I spent 30 days together and then we didn't talk for a month. He was like, you know, you have to, like, have space. And so, yeah, like, you know, when quarantine ended, we were still kind of staying with each other because my house wasn't finished and stuff. And yeah, you have to reset and kind of, you know, go back to normal life. So now we're normal people dating, which is good. and it's fun. But yeah, it did start to put a lot of pressure on things towards the end of it, because we were only been dating for 3 months and we're spending, you know, every day together, and it definitely accelerates stuff.
Absolutely. Well, I'm so excited to see how everything kind of unfolds this season, and I appreciate you talking to me about it, and I'm just so excited to see everything happen.
Of course. No, this was great, and I'm excited to talk to y'all throughout the year. I'm glad we were able to get this season done. So,
well, thank you so much.
All right, see you, girls.
OC?
Orange County. Okay, I'm going to reiterate my point from last week that John is adorable. And specifically when he's at the table with Shannon and he goes, oh, brother.
Oh, brother.
Like, what? Like, that is the cutest thing ever. I feel like nobody says that anymore. And it kind of shows how maybe old fashioned he is, but he's so handsome and just, oh, I don't know. There's something about John.
I think it's also because it's the way he adores Shannon, and she's a little bit crazy, but he loves that about her. Producers do a great job of showing the contrast between him and David, and just things that Shannon would do that it drove David crazy, and John's in that, you know, period of oh my God, that's so cute. And maybe
right.
that stays that way.
Do you think David watches Orange County?
I always wonder that. Because wouldn't you watch your ex on a reality show?
I don't know. Like, I'd probably check in once in a while just out of curiosity and then, like, turn it off really fast.
I just think I have a morbid, like, it's like I like the pain.
Yes, you've said that before.
It's true.
I believe that.
I said that in a private conversation, different context. I want to move on to this dinner with Elizabeth and Gina and Kelly. I am pissed that Elizabeth can't tell us anything about her life, basically, because she has this gag order from her ex-husband. Like, she can't talk about anything to do with him, even who he is. That's crazy to me. And I don't like that.
Right. I mean, especially as a housewife, so often, you know, we expect them to be able to share all the dirty details, and she's not able to do that at the moment. So two things. I'm hoping, one, when she can, that it's like epic and whatever she is sitting on is like huge and juicy and scandalous and out of control. And now my expectation is there. And then two, remember last week I told you she reminded me of Dana Wilkie and I can't unsee it?
Yeah.
I saw a meme that says she's a Melissa McCarthy character come to life and now I can't unsee that.
She's very physical. Like, it's not, it's, do you know what I mean? Like, Melissa McCarthy's yeah. whole thing is like physical comedy and I see it. Like, she's very, what's the word? I'm gesturing my hands wildly. She's very animated. I also am... I said this last week, but the whole thing where I was like, it doesn't make sense. She doesn't have sex with her boyfriend, Jimmy. Okay. I more so think that now because she, when Gina said, how long have you dated Jimmy? She's like, I can neither confirm nor deny. Mm-hmm. So I think the whole thing about not sleeping with him, it all has to do with the court case and like not being seen as an adulterer or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm very curious about the timeline. And I think that whenever this divorce goes through, I hope we get like a bonus special with her where she can just tell us everything that happened.
Yeah, totally.
A divorce party. She said she wanted to throw one.
Yeah. Also, I felt bad for Gina because having seen this episode a couple of times, I know, and you know, we'll get into it. But Shannon supposedly didn't say anything about Gina's house that was bad. She said it was small, you know, just in a matter-of-fact way.
Mm-hmm.
But Gina thinks Shannon has been talking shit about her. And so now Gina's saying terrible things about Shannon. And it's like this vicious cycle, you know?
Right. Right. It's very OC, I think, in particular, for this kind of like chain of events to play out the way that it did. You know, I feel like Gina a little bit is taking it and like kind of letting it roll off her back and isn't really super offended by people talking about her house. She's very aware of it being small. It's just a matter of people saying really negative things and calling her lifestyle sad or whatever. You know, I can see why she's offended by those particular words and kind of offended by like, why would Shannon do that? But she's also kind of taking it pretty well, all things considered. She's not like really angry. She's just a bit confused and like wants to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah. Well, so getting into it, who do we believe, Shannon or Bronwyn?
I want to say that I believe Bronwyn, right? Because what motivation does she have to lie about this? Like, why? To really get under Gina's skin? I don't think Bronwyn is that manipulative. I don't think she would do something to purposely hurt someone. I think she's trying to hold Shannon accountable for what she said. But I don't love, like Emily said in this episode, that Bronwyn is weaponizing, you know, Shannon's sobriety or the fact that she was drunk and might have said something and doesn't remember, especially knowing Bronwyn's journey that she's on right now. So I don't know. Shannon seems to be really upset and is doubling down on like, don't put words in my mouth. But I can also see somebody after a few drinks saying something a little off the cuff, shady, whatever, about Gina's house.
But I mean, I guess I just believe Shannon because she so emphatically says to Gina, you own. The rest of us are renters. Like, you're the one who's winning. So how is that sad even?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, maybe I'm gullible, but I do believe Shannon. I think that maybe – I think two people can have a conversation and there's just two different ideas of what was said, especially if,
mm-hmm.
if you're projecting onto someone. Like Bronwyn thinks it's sad. So it makes sense that she would hear that coming out of Shannon's mouth, even if Shannon didn't say it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I want to believe Shannon. I do, because I feel like Shannon is in such a positive place in her life right now that she wouldn't really want any of that kind of negativity, and she wouldn't welcome something like that onto Gina also. But, you know, Bronwyn is like, I heard what you said, and Sean's also agreeing with her. So now it's a bit of a two against one thing, and it always gets a little rocky when the house husbands get involved. But if Sean is like, I heard it too, then I don't know, Shannon, maybe she did say it. It's unfortunate that there were no cameras there at the time, because that would solve the problem really easily. But I don't know. I want to believe Shannon, but I kind of feel like at this point, I don't know why Bronwyn would lie.
I do want to take a moment and, you know, not to objectify women or anything, but can we talk about Elizabeth's ass? It's like Kardashian proportions.
Is it?
Yes. You didn't notice?
Okay. So I will say I very often do clock people's butts, whether you're male, female, whatever. I am just like a butt person and I pay attention to that. I have not clocked hers yet. And now I feel like I need to go and watch this episode.
You need to go back specifically at Shannon's party, because she's wearing this tight white dress and it's insane in a good way, but it's insane.
As a Kardashian expert, do you think that her butt is real or is it perhaps enhanced?
Isn't it weird though that we care whether it's real or fake? Like as if that actually makes the difference, you know? Isn't
right.
Like, do we care that Teresa Giudice's boobs aren't real? No, but like,
no, we don't care.
We just think, you know, she looks great. There you go.
I know. I'm always just so curious. I feel like there is some kind of glory of being like, oh, this is all mine. You know, I mean,
right.
If you want a bigger butt, go ahead and buy yourself one. Like, I support it 100%. But it's sort of like, oh, I'm just lucky. You know, it's like that's some kind of thing to be proud of, I think.
My favorite part of this episode, though, is absolutely Gina going after Bronwyn and being like, you're never clear. And then production has to subtitle her, because what she's in fact yelling is sloppy chihuahua, which I had no idea watching the Super Tease what she was saying.
No, me neither.
You're a sloppy chihuahua. You're never clear.
Sloppy chihuahua.
I wonder if in real time a producer had to go over to her and be like, can you just let us know what you just said? Because we need to write that down. I mean, she's got quite an accent, right? And I think somehow living in Southern California, her accent has gotten stronger, especially since we've met her. I don't know how or why, but yeah, I appreciate that we get subtitles with her, because sometimes I'm not sure. And we live here. I live around people who are from Long Island, but sometimes I'm like, I don't know what she's saying. Also, can we just take a moment to appreciate Emily popping Gina's white head at the party? Because as gross as that may be, that is true friendship. And that is a sure sign that the two of them are back in a good place. They are sisters again. And I'm just like, I really do appreciate that kind of sisterhood.
Gross.
I also think just overall, this episode in particular has really, it's helped the season really find its footing. You know, I think we're all now on the same page as to like what the tension is. You know, we're on the journey with Bronwyn now. We're seeing Shannon's home life. We see Emily in a better place. Gina living with Travis. Like now I feel like the first two episodes, I was like, okay, well, where is this season going? Because obviously we had no idea about the revelation of Bronwyn in episode one. So now that we're kind of in it, I feel like we're in a good place and it's kind of hit its stride.
Yeah.
What do you think of Emily's impersonation of Shannon?
I would never say such a thing. No.
No.
Oh God, no.
No.
Me?
Me? No. She always does that.
Me?
Me?
Not me?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was great when Shane started doing it too from the backseat.
It's way too fun. I think I mentioned this last season because I feel like a lot of Shannon's interviews were very hand heavy, and it's kind of that like flipper, you know?
Well, it's a very straight, rigid hand, and the palms are always facing toward her.
It's like the opposite of wax on, wax off. Remember Karate Kid? Right, it's like it's right. Facing her and it's always just in like these rotations. It's too much fun. It's actually way too much fun to do.
Too much fun.
I'm doing it right now. I wish you could see me.
Me?
Me? That could be a good Halloween costume. Shannon Bedore, you walk around like that, you get a bowl of lemons, you know, there's something there.
Yeah, you're good.
I'll do it next year. Also, shout out to the Desperate Housewives reference, because that was a bit meta.
Wait, what was the reference?
I think it was actually Travis. Gina's husband, Travis, said something about Desperate Housewives, and Gina was like, yeah.
Are you excited to see their house?
Yeah, I don't know anything about it.
They moved to that super bougie area, the Port Street, Shannon, and then Kelly is moving there, and Bronwyn.
What was that show? They all lived on the same street.
Desperate Housewives.
Yeah.
It does upset me that not enough people make the connection that Real Housewives of OC was a play on that. Like Desperate Housewives, they held the apples, mm-hmm. you know? And then Orange County came and they held the oranges. And then eventually New York, you know, came and they did the apples too.
Right. I mean, I feel like if you think back to that time, Desperate Housewives was a huge show. I was obsessed with it when it first came out. And then you had the popularity of the OC and Laguna Beach and all these shows. So they were just like, why don't we combine Desperate Housewives with Orange County? And there it was.
Well, and that's, I think, why there was such a focus on Behind the mm-hmm. Gates, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Potomac?
Okay, I have a question. And I might have asked you this before, but I'm very curious to know your response. When you are ring shopping for someone, how do you match a ring to a woman? Like, I feel like I have so many female friends who have gotten married, who have gotten mm-hmm. engaged, who have rings. And it's always such a big deal when, you know, it's always the sister who goes with the, you know, the guy to help pick it out. And, you know, it's this process that feels really intimate in some ways. So obviously Giselle's been doing this with Juan the whole time, but like, how do you know a ring is right for a woman? Do you just need to get that information in advance before you go shopping, no matter who's there to help you?
Yeah, I feel like typically the process is the guy doing the proposing gets in good with the girl's best friend
mm-hmm.
and the best friend finds a way to extract that information in a way that's not totally obvious. Because I mean, to be fair, we do talk about weddings and stuff. It was so funny. I asked this girl that I'm friends with, like, if you ever got married, do you think, like, what kind of wedding do you think you would have? And I honestly thought her response was going to be like, I don't know. I'm so far from that. And then she, like, immediately sent me a link to a place. And she's like, I want to get married on this alpaca farm. I was like, what?
Alpaca farm?
Yeah, it looked really cute. But it just surprises me, you know, that even the girls that you don't think are into that are, you know, always have that in the back of their mind. So I think that it's pretty easy as a girl to get that information from your girlfriend.
But is there any kind of like correlation to like a personality and the shape of the ring or the color? You know, there's so many things to think about. There's so many different cuts and like the way you put it into the thing.
That's why you have to say to someone, if you were to ever get engaged again, like what kind of ring do you think you would want?
Is that a hint for me to ask you?
No. But you know, because there are so many options, how do you really know? I mean, this is kind of sad to mention, but I feel like Kanye West knew. He didn't need to hear it from someone. He just knew the perfect ring to get for Kim. But as we know, it got stolen.
Right. Oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot about that. God, wasn't that a wild time? Woo.
Yes. But yeah, I mean, I think I felt bad for Juan because he's having to tell how much he wants to spend on air.
We have to have like a number here, Juan.
Maybe 8 to 10.
We can do 8 to 10. Absolutely.
Okay.
It's also the second one. So I guess it's okay that it's, you know, maybe at a discounted price.
I don't know. He cheated. He might need to spend a little more.
Well, I don't know. You know, Robin's over here owing 90 grand to the IRS. So I don't think we should be spending, I don't know, 59 grand on a ring. Seems like we're just the money. I don't know. Better places it could be going.
It is good. He's being practical.
Yeah.
You know?
What did you think about the way that he asked her parents at the bowling alley?
I just think I would not want to be in his shoes. I mean, he really hurt their daughter and now he's having to ask again, like, do you trust me to remarry her?
Yeah.
But I think that he's lucky that they love him.
Right. I mean, I think when you realize their history and the fact that they've known Juan since he was so young and that he lost his parents, so they took him in. I mean, he's practically a son to them in so many ways. So it must have been difficult for him to ask their permission again, knowing that there is so much history there, and it's been a lot of ups and downs. But one thing that I thought was really amazing, and this comes out in the after show, is that Robin had no idea that Juan asked her parents at the bowling alley. Like, when she went away to the bathroom, she legitimately had no clue that they were having that conversation. And when I was interviewing her for the after show, it came up, you know, and I mentioned it, and I was like, I'm not sure if you're aware. And she was like, oh my God, no. And then she was like, were my boys there? And I was like, yeah, they were there to witness it. And she was like, oh my God, that's so amazing. And I felt so great that I was able to, I mean, I kind of felt like I spoiled the moment for Robin, but I also was so, I felt so grateful to be able to give her that and just see her reaction.
Really, but selfishly, I'm glad I got to see the reaction.
I mean, 100%, because it was so authentic. And just the way that she asked, like, were my boys there? Like, I was like, oh my God, I was like, this is a real authentic moment that was captured, you know, on camera. And Robin had no idea.
So sweet. All right, let's talk about Monique.
Okay.
Because we haven't enough this season.
Right. Who?
I sort of agree with her in that she had this revelation last episode that she should not have done that to Candace. And yes, it took her maybe too long, but it is her timeline. It's her, mm-hmm. her truth. And she's now seeing what she's done wrong. She wants everyone to know that. But the women who say they want to see her change, like she says, aren't willing to show up and watch the change happen.
They want to see that you have changed, but then they don't want to show up to see it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I understand where Monique is coming from. And I felt bad watching her make the phone calls, because that takes a lot to actually directly call somebody as opposed to, you know, sending a text or sending an email. Usually when you have an event, you're just like, you send out an email or something, right? But she actually took the time to make phone calls to people. So I felt bad, you know, when everyone was like, Robin was like, I don't know, maybe. And it was all, everyone was a little hesitant except for Karen, except for Ashley. But on the same, on the flip side, I guess, how much progress has she really been able to make in this, what was it, maybe 2 weeks at this point since the altercation, maybe a little bit longer? I understand why some of the women might feel hesitant, like, I'm not ready to be around her yet. I'm not really sure what this will accomplish by me going. You know, I feel bad that she didn't get the support for something that she's worked so hard on, but I can understand why the women might have reservations at this particular time, when they haven't been privy to the conversation she had with her pastor or some of the other work that she's done.
Right.
You know, I mean, I kind of see both sides.
I don't really understand. I've never been put in a position where I've had to say to someone, I need to see that you've changed. How do you measure that? You know?
Mm, yeah.
How do you put a time limit on that? I think it's more so that's why you can put an exact stamp on, you have to promise you'll never do this again.
Yeah, right. Well, and even so, if they had gone to this live podcast, I loved when the MC straight up asked her about her relationship with Candace, even though prior to the live show, she had been like, please don't ask about that. The MC was like, I'm going rogue and I'm going to do it anyway.
My first question for the panel, Monique, tell us the current state of you and Candace's relationship.
And like, I appreciate that Monique was like, pray for us. You know, I mean, she didn't say anything shady about Candace. She didn't get angry. She maintained composure. It was a live show, so anything can go wrong. And when she asked, she was just sort of like, pray for us. She kind of left it at like, I'm not going to say a lot, but I'm going to say that we need help, you know, like, and we're working on it. That's what that said to me. So I think if the women had maybe seen that response, they would have viewed Monique a little bit differently in that moment, but I don't know. We'll never know.
I feel like watching Monique's live podcast really reminded me of when we did our live podcast at BravoCon.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. I just wanted to remind people we did a live podcast at BravoCon.
Right. And actually, Monique came up because Giselle was our guest, our first guest. And now that I'm thinking of the timeline, that was after the altercation.
Yes. Yes, and she had sort of made mention of it a little bit. And I think also I remember her saying that Ashley was bringing the baby to every single event, even events baby right. not be at. And it's true.
And we are surely seeing that this season.
I have to say, it does bother me. And maybe that's terrible, but it's just like, I know the feeling of not wanting my friends to always bring their kids to things. It's like sometimes can't we just do adult things, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. There should be, you know, it should be decided prior to an event whether kids are coming, which kind of brings me back to the lake house thing and like why Wendy was like, well, what do you mean she has her baby and I don't have mine? Like, kind of makes more sense to me now. Wine with Wendy, this event that she has organized, I can't even believe how relevant this conversation is to this current moment. And thinking that this was actually filmed at the end of 2019, like not to say this conversation has not been important this whole time, but just the things that were presented that we saw in this episode, the way that Wendy was talking about the importance of, you know, Black women and women getting out there and voting in their local elections, like not just in presidential, but in all of the local stuff like that. It's so timely. And I feel like it, you know, didn't even mean to be, you know, but it's so important to see these kind of events happening and to see people like Wendy, like leading this conversation, because whatever happens after the election, like we all need to make changes going forward. And I think that's the point that she was trying to make.
Absolutely. The point I didn't understand she was trying to make was at the end, after the event was over, and she sort of inserted herself in this conversation between Karen and Candace. Like, Wendy, yeah, this isn't about you right now.
Wendy, I don't, as educated as you are, you sound very ignorant.
Yeah, that seems strange because I understand that she is friends with Candace and maybe felt as though Candace would need backup in this situation. But she should know, given her relationship with Karen at this point, that her interjecting is not going to be well received. Karen's going to be defensive. She's going to wonder why you're stepping in to a conversation between her and her friend, and it's going to make her a little angry. Like, you have to expect that.
Also, I feel for Karen. Don't put her in a position where she has to choose. She didn't do anything wrong. The fight was between Monique and Candace, so it's not fair to make her sort of responsible in any sort of way.
Right. Like, what is the goal in getting Karen to be against Monique other than, you know, rallying almost the entire cast against her? Like, I don't understand why they want Karen to admit that or pick a side. It just seems a little bit unfair and unnecessary at this point. I can see why Candace feels as a friend that she wants Karen to back her up. And I think Karen is supporting her and she's supporting Monique and she's limiting that support to each of them to try to be balanced. And I don't think it's fair for anyone, Candace or Wendy or any of the other women, to try to pull her in either direction. Everyone else is clear on where they stand. So let them do their thing and then let Karen do hers.
Absolutely.
One thing that I thought was interesting that Ashley mentioned on Watch What Happens Live, which I think we've touched on this in various ways in the conversations we've had since the altercation. But I thought that the way Ashley presented it was pretty interesting. It's basically that she was saying, the night of the altercation, the way Monique behaved was out of character for her, right? But the way Candace behaved wasn't. Like, we have seen Candace get loud and, you know, in people's face and drag me and this and that and get, you know, everyone has said on this cast that Candace has a mouth and can run it in times when it's inappropriate. But we have never seen Monique get to this point. So really, when you look at it from that perspective, it's like, who is the one that really might need the help in this situation? Probably Monique. Who is the victim? Obviously Candace. But it sort of is a bigger picture perspective, which makes sense because Ashley wasn't there for the literal altercation. So I think she can see it from a bit of a different perspective. And obviously she is, you know, more on Monique's side than anything else, but I still think that's a pretty accurate description of how things played out that night. Rose and Thorn?
Yes.
Okay, let's do Rose and Thorn.
Okay, what was your rose?
Absolutely. It was from Real Housewives of Orange County, and it was Kelly referring to Shannon's father as Big Dick Daddy.
Oh, there's Daddy. I hear a lot about
big,
you.
Big Dad.
Big Dick Daddy from Cincinnati. Right?
Oh, my God.
That's it. I just, anytime I can get a Big Dick Daddy mention.
I love that Shannon didn't even want to say it and she spelled it out in her interview. She like couldn't even bring herself to say it. I mean, nobody wants to hear anyone they're related to described that way. Never mind your father. Come on.
What's your rose?
Well, my rose is from Southern Charm, and it's Craig and Austin living together because it's just like achieving all of my gay fantasies about these two. Like, it's just, we get a glimpse into what their life would be like if they were a couple. Like, Austin's got on his robe. Like, Craig's walking around in those matching PJs. They're doing laundry together. I was like, this is the show I want to watch.
Your gay fantasy looks a little different than mine, but...
Okay. It's okay. They're probably not too far off, honestly. But like...
I mean, it definitely involves Craig and Austin. Let's be clear.
What was your thorn?
I might throw up even talking about it. But it's the Housewives of Potomac. It's Wendy giving her grown sons droplets of her breast milk.
You know, last time you had milk?
Yeah, when I was sick.
Yes, yes, yes.
And guess what the milk does to you?
Makes you better.
Makes you feel better. All right. I go.
This is why they always come into our room at night.
Okay, you got two drops. Okay, you ready? Okay, go. One, two.
Are you kidding me? And look, I know I am not a mom. I'm sure there's an ick factor that wouldn't be there if I were one. But I can't help how I feel. This is my truth. That grosses me out.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I feel like I have no say in this because I'm not a woman. I have no right to it. But like, it definitely is one of those things that I'm like, do we need to do that? Is it necessary? Like, probably not. We could live without it.
Okay. What was your thorn?
Well, my thorn was seeing Thomas on Southern Charm. And that's all I'm going to say about it.
Yep.
And we'll be back with an all new episode next Saturday.
And remember, watching Bravo isn't a guilty pleasure.
It's self-care.
Guys, let's keep the conversation going. We want to talk to you all week long. You can find us on Instagram at Bravo Daily Dish.
And on Twitter at Bravo TV. Just don't forget to use the hashtag Bravo Daily Dish.
Or reach out to us personally. I'm everywhere at Meg Segura.
And I'm everywhere at Eric J. Mack. That's E-R-I-K.
And if you're on Facebook, join the Daily Dish Facebook group.
You can post about what you're watching, your favorite shows, who's your favorite housewife, ask a question, start some drama. There's a lot of good stuff in there, so check it out.
You can also learn more about the podcast at bravotv.com.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Looking fine, and I got my girls with me. With the boys at the table getting tipsy, miss me. Can't